woman made across the floor. Says she right on out the door and into the glade, and everybody promenade.
You're tuned to the Square Dance Radio Network. Today is Wednesday, January 11th, 2012.
And you're listening to the Do-Si-Do Show, episode number 31.
Hi, I'm your host, Dale Hodge, from Columbia, Maryland.
And I'm Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Hello, Dale, and hello, Square Dance community. Today we have the second part of our interview with caller Deborah Carol Jones and her husband, John Jones, from Texas.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with them last week, and the interview continues and is a great deal of fun.
Yeah, if you can hurt your cheeks from smiling or laughing too much, I think that happened to me last time.
Yeah. And there turns out there'll be a third part to this particular interview as well. So,
yay.
Great deal of fun.
Yeah.
So, Barb, what'd you do this past weekend, first full weekend of
the new year,
2012?
Yeah. Right. I had a lot of family time, I'm happy to say. I was missing seeing some of the folks, and I got to see a basketball game that my nephew played. He's 9 and in the third grade, and I got to see my mom twice on two separate days, which is kind of unusual, and my sister, who hasn't been feeling well, came to mom's house, and we all went to church together, so it was good to see her again, too.
Great.
Yeah. How about you? What did you do this past weekend?
Well, we got into Chicago and had Christmas with Kathy's parents. That's turns out to be an all-day event. I think we arrived at 2:30 or so and left at 11 or 11:30 at night.
That's a big day.
Very nice dinner and no end of opening gifts. So it was a great deal of fun. And I got a lot of really fun stuff, some puzzles and books and some new clothes.
Great.
And then Sunday we had birthday with Kathy's extended family. So it was a very nice weekend.
Lots of partying.
Who'd you like to say hello to this week, Barb?
A little shout out today to my friends Tom and Jill Stift on the passing of Tom's dad. Tom's dad, Elmer, passed after a short but pretty severe illness. He had some oxygen problems and just wasn't feeling well, wasn't eating, and it's a sad, sad thing, but I think he's in a better place, and our thoughts and prayers are with Tom and Jill and Tom's family.
Mm-hmm.
And you?
Just to other callers in general, and specifically five or six other callers that are banding together and working together through a difficult situation to help another caller. So just to other callers in general who work together. All right, well, this is now part two of our interview with Deborah Carol Jones and John Jones. And let's hop right back into it. Again, good luck not laughing. So, John, how much are you calling these days?
I'll average two or three times a month right now.
Mm-hmm. I got to believe that you're getting more calls than that, people clamoring to hear you.
Well, the number of bookings has dropped off drastically. I just got through writing an article for Caller Lab about it, that mine and Deborah's bookings have dropped 40% in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the decline of the activity.
Right.
And my bookings have dropped off quite a bit because of my age, and that's to be expected. I'm 76 years old.
Are you really?
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it? It sure doesn't look it.
I've been calling for 56 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's expected of me, but I looked at our calendar, and this particular month, well, Deborah found a date that she's got to go do that she had overlooked, but I was looking at the calendar, and I was the only one who had a dance book this month. And that's tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
For a local club here in the area, but we don't have a local club of our own, and because we travel so much and we would be away from them so much, and they just don't think that would be fair to them, so we have just been freelancing.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
For the past 10 years.
So what? And Deborah, are you doing any weekends in January, or you're really off all the whole month?
I've got to go out to California and do a dance out there.
Uh-huh.
And But my bookings are funny. They come in chunks. I'll have like 3 months where I'm flying around from one end of the country to the other. It's just crazy. And then I'll hit a bald spot, which is actually very welcome at this
yeah.
time of my life, to where I can kind of slow down and catch my breath. And so that it they are down from what they were previously. But see, like John was saying, see, here in Texas, the system is club callers. And
mm-hmm.
in Southern California, where I started calling, they're almost all guest callers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we basically, those of us that were booked, we kind of ran a circuit. You know what I mean
mm-hmm.
down there?
Mm-hmm.
And I worked almost every single Friday, every Saturday, and probably half of my Sundays
mm-hmm.
calling. And so it's just a different system. And when I moved here, John and I seriously discussed how do we want to handle this. And both of us said, we just, at this point in our lives, we kind of want to pick and choose. And to commit to a club means that you teach their classes, you call their dances. You're very, very much the anchoring force in that club. And I said, I can't do that to a club. If I get asked to go to call a weekend in Washington, I'm going. And you can't do that
mm-hmm.
to a club. So we just couldn't do it in good conscience. So we decided that we would not take on our own club here. So it does
mm-hmm.
leave us with more holes in the calendar, but it works better for us.
Yeah, and then you have time for family and other things too. As you're saying, if you slow down a little bit, you don't want to be jet setting every weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
So does that mean you've never really taught a set of square dance lessons to?
Oh no, there? I've taught many, many classes.
Okay, but it was early on.
Yeah. Well, see, in Southern California, what they had was, since they had guest callers, they would have a caller who taught their classes, and classes were during the week, and the club's dance was on the weekend.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes, I've taught many classes in Southern California, and we've taught. Three classes here, honey, or four? Three classes here.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement with caller schools? Like, what's your focus?
I have been an accredited caller coach since 1995, a Caller Lab accredited caller coach.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a goal that I had set for myself that I wanted to achieve, and I was the third woman caller in the world to be accredited. So there just weren't very many of us, you know. We're coming along, but there weren't very many of us then. So John and I were talking about this last night. We do a lot of caller schools. And the focus, I said to John last night, my focus has changed since I first started doing caller schools. And we started talking about the whys and wherefores of that. And I come from a teaching background, I picture it as there are teachers who teach a subject, and there are teachers who teach students.
Mm-hmm.
And you can teach a subject, but that doesn't mean anybody there learned it.
Yeah.
But you can go out the door and say, I taught History 101. And then you have another teacher who teaches that subject, but they gear it for the students. They pull the students in and involve them. And I have realized that the full Caller Lab curriculum for caller schools is a tremendous amount of information.
Mm-hmm.
And I was used to try to make sure that everybody knew everything by the end of the week. And that was an enormous amount of pressure that I put on the students and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so now my focus is more, yes, I want to give them the tools, but I want them to feel good about themselves during the process. I want to push them, I want to stretch them, but I don't want to break them. I want them to feel like they accomplished something and they learned something and they feel good about the experience. That has become more important to me in the last several schools. And we've been working with a particular system of calling called CRAMS, which stands for
Controlled
Controlled Resolution and Manipulation System, CRAMS. And it deals with the four parts of what you need to know to call. You need to know your formations, you need to know your arrangements, you need to know sequence, and you need to know the relationship. Who's dancing with who? Do I have my right-hand lady? Do I have my opposite lady? Mm-hmm. And I've tried to give the students a little bit of those tools so they have a little bit better control and they see the value of modules. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't. I wasn't taught to module call. So, and that kind of left me three-legged in a four-legged world.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn how to patch those holes. And that's kind of how my focus has shifted in the caller schools that we have done. I guess I'm gearing it a little bit more for who's there, because the focus of every school can change. If I happen to have a school of 25-year-olds, I probably could present that curriculum and they'd all walk out the door and know it all.
Mm-hmm.
But you get people that are more are our age, because callers come from dancers and our dancer population is aging.
Yeah.
So we get new callers into our school that are 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to learn doesn't change with age, but the ability to retain it changes with age.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to walk out the door at the end of a caller school hanging on to as much as someone who's 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that in that regard, that's how my focus has shifted as a coach.
And, John, what as far as your involvement with caller schools, what's your focus and what do you enjoy teaching the most?
Well, becoming a Caller Lab accredited caller coach was a desire of mine when the program was first introduced, and I was one of the first nine that Caller Lab had when the program got started, and we got it off the ground, and then we began to help train others to become caller coaches. And in those days of teaching caller schools at that time, it was hardcore sight calling. And that was the main focus of nearly every caller school that we did. We did a certain amount of formation management, and I was always very strong on formation management and believe that callers should have that ability. But go from there on into hardcore sight calling,
mm-hmm.
and a certain amount of singing calls. We didn't put as much emphasis on singing calls as I felt like we should have, but that was the trend at that time. And like Deborah was saying, we have backed off from that a lot over the last few years, and my main focus now is with whatever type of group that we have to teach in our schools is presentation and entertainment of the dancers,
mm-hmm.
More so than the hardcore choreography. We just did a school over in Sweden last year, and incidentally, Vernon was one of the caller coaches with us over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a family affair in teaching the Swedish caller school, and we had about 30 callers in the school, and most of them were much younger than we, and in their 20s and early 30s. And so they could absorb and do nearly anything that we wanted to do. And so we pushed them very hard and gave them everything that we felt like they needed. Depending on their ability, we had them divided up into three different categories. And then we did another caller school this past October over at Pride in North Carolina. And nearly all of the callers were in midlife. And one of them was 70 years old, and he was a brand new caller. Then we had one that was 16 years old, and he was absorbing it and wanted everything that we gave him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to gear the school to the age of the students that were in it. And we work more on presentation. How do you present this, learn this, and know how to control it, but here's how you present it.
Mm-hmm. Being an entertainer.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Letting the dancers have fun and enjoy the experience. and you as a caller enjoy the experience as well, and don't try to beat them to death with hardcore choreography that they can't handle.
Yeah. I still remember the moment when I was on stage when I transformed from being a caller to being an entertainer who uses calling to entertain.
I can remember
that moment exactly.
That's a wonderful way to state it. I love that.
Sure is.
Yeah.
So, now, John, you mentioned Caller Lab. Can you talk a little bit more about your involvement with Caller Lab?
I knew that Caller Lab was being organized before it ever got announced. Because one of my mentors that I mentioned earlier, Manning Smith, he was involved in the preliminary discussion of it. Bob Osgood out in California is the one that put it together, and there were a few people that got invited to come to a meeting, and I was not on the invitation list, but that was okay. I knew my time would come eventually. So when they decided to have the first convention in St. Louis in 1974, I was on the invitation list to join or attend. And so I went to the first convention there, and I have attended every convention every year since. I haven't missed one yet.
Wow.
But that day's coming, I'm sure. And shortly after, two or three years after it got started, well, then I was approached to run for the Board of Governors, and I did, and got elected, and I served 13 years on the board.
Wonderful.
And I was chairman of the board. I was the third chairman of the board. Jim Mayo was first, and Jack Lazary was the second, and I was the third chairman. And we each served 2 years as chairman of the Board of Governors. And prior to becoming that, I was chairman of the Mainstream Committee. Johnny LeClaire was the first chairman of the Mainstream Committee, and I was his vice chairman, and he dropped off, and then I took it, and I kept that for several years. And then after we got into the Caller Coach Accreditation Program, then I later became chairman of the Caller Coach Committee for several years, and I've been involved in the activity and in the organization ever since. And in 1998, the board decided to have a committee called Applications Review, where dancers and callers can write into Caller Lab and ask if they heard a caller use a particular application or call something from a particular formation that they may not have thought was correct or proper, and so they can inquire to the home office about that, and it's referred to this committee, and I've been chairman of the committee since it was organized. And we have 25 members on the committee from all over the world, from Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Canada, England, and mainland Europe. And we review the question and then give a ruling on it as to whether it was proper or improper, and then we publish that as well.
And then what happens after that? Does the caller get scolded or something?
He may.
That's horrible.
The person that asked the question is notified of the decision, then it's up to them as to whether they go back to the caller with it or not.
Okay.
Caller Lab does not.
Yeah.
We just render a decision, and that decision is published on the website that anybody can look at and read, and it's also published in Direction, the magazine that Caller Lab puts out. It's up to the caller as to whether they comply with it or not.
Because we
don't have any laws, and we don't have any rules, and nobody's going to get killed if they do something wrong.
Yeah, we're not going to throw anybody out.
Do you think
it helps the callers call a more consistent program?
Yes, we think it has had a tremendous effect on the calling activity, in that callers are more aware of what they're doing or what they should not do.
I see. Interesting.
And Deborah, your involvement with Caller Lab?
I joined Caller Lab in 1985, and I'd been calling for less than 3 years at the time, and it was a
you had an invitation to come to a convention. You didn't just sign up and go. You had to meet certain qualifications, and I had another caller in California who was going to go, and he really wanted me to join Caller Lab. He talked it up, and this is where the movers and shakers go, and this is where the decisions are made. And so I had heard that there was a little caveat where even if you hadn't been calling a minimum of 3 years, if you had 150 dates in that time frame, you could still receive an invitation. So I called the Caller Lab office and asked if that was so, and it was John Kaltenthaler, who was the executive secretary at the time, and he said, he asked, well, how many bookings do you have? And I said, well, I haven't counted them all up. And he said, I tell you what, the convention is in April, and I wouldn't have been calling for 3 years until August. And he said, if you have 150 dates on your calendar by the date of convention, I will send you an invitation to attend. And the convention was in Phoenix, so it was close for me, and I wanted to be able to go. So I went back and counted them all up, and I had 153. I was so jazzed. So I called him back, and he said, okay, I'll send you an invitation. So I went to the convention all wide-eyed and saw all these callers that you hear of, and you see them on records and everything, I was a very enthusiastic member of Caller Lab, and after I had been a member for a few years, I was asked to be on a panel to talk about music, and I was tremendously honored and excited about that. Mm-hmm. And I joined the Plus Committee. I joined every committee that I qualified for. And so I've always been real involved. And then I served a couple of terms on the Board of Governors. And then my life went through a shift, and I just really didn't have the time to devote mm-hmm. to it. So when my term was up, I stopped. And then when John and I married, now I had time again. So I thought, well, I'll run again and see what happens. And I was reelected, so I guess this is my fourth term, two that I've served previously and then two now. And I also have chaired the Women in Calling Committee. I've been their chairman for about 10 years. So we've done some really good things in that committee that I'm very proud of. And I was vice chairman of the Caller Training Committee for a number of years as well. So I've been in there, you know, pretty much up to my elbows.
Wow, what a great deal of fun the two of them are. As I said, I would love to sit down and just have dinner with them and listen to more stories.
Yeah, the rapport between the two of them, you could just feel how much fun it is over the air, I'm sure.
Yep. I love that John is a backwoods cowboy and Deborah's a valley girl. Kind of seems like you'd have a sitcom going on there in the house.
Yeah, it sure does. And the amount of time and energy that they've given to square dancing, calling, Caller Lab, they've been so involved, and they're calling colleges and things too. It's really amazing.
Yep. And how much both of them have been involved with Caller Lab and all the work that that they've done. I was surprised to hear that John isn't calling as much these days, but mm-hmm. it certainly sounds like he's very happy doing what he's doing, the way he's doing it, and sending Deborah off to call a number of weekends.
Yeah.
So next week, on the 18th, we'll hear more from Deborah and John about things that they are the proudest of. Deborah's obsession, her interest in musical Grease, just other interesting things about the two of them.
Yes, not to be missed.
Yeah,
definitely listen to part three.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what do you have coming up this weekend, Barb?
Well, like you, we're going to finish a little bit of family Christmas celebrating, I hope. My two nieces were in volleyball tournaments in different places both days last weekend, so we could not do our traditional family get-together for extended family Christmas last weekend. So we hope to do that this weekend. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh, great.
I call it the last 2011 Christmas celebration, at least for our family. And I did mean 2011.
Yeah.
And what do you have upcoming?
This Sunday is the benefit dance that we're holding in the D.C. area. And really looking forward to being a part of that and
the
helping
one for
out.
Don Marshall, right?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So
I hope you get a big crowd and a lot of money.
I hope so, too.
And thanks again to our guest, Deborah Carol Jones, and her husband, John Jones, from Arlington, Texas. This is Barb Jarvis from Wheeling, Illinois. Goodbye, Dale. Have a good week, everyone.
And this is Dale Hodge from Columbia, Maryland. Ciao, Barb. Happy dancing. See you on the dance floor. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.